is Nightline.
Tonight, deadly capture, the dramatic end to the nationwide manhunt for fugitives Vicky White and Casey White, the former corrections officer taking her own life.
It was a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
What we're now learning about their final days on the run.
We got a dangerous man off the street today.
Plus, Baby is back. We're with Jennifer Grey, reprising her role in Dirty Dancing.
I'm playing Baby. I hope they don't call me Bubby at this point.
What she's now saying about her tense relationship with Patrick Swayze.
Nobody puts Baby in a corner.
What it took to convince him to say that iconic line.
The most famous movie line, perhaps, of all time.
Adamant. Adamant.
And Stand By Ukraine. Stand by Ukraine. Bono and The Edge take a new version of the classic song, To Key. Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Their names and faces were everywhere, so it's not surprising that a tip from the public led authorities to Vicky White and Casey White, the unlikely fugitive pair, a corrections officer, and accused murderer who managed to evade authorities for more than a week.
This has ended a very long and stressful and challenging week and a half.
The nationwide manhunt for two Alabama fugitives, which spans several states and multiple law enforcement agencies, coming to a dramatic end in Indiana tonight. The sheriff's deputy, 56-year-old Vicky White, who helped plot the escape of 38-year-old inmate Casey White, has died shortly after the pair was taken into custody.
I don't know where she was shot, but it was a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
It was a tip that finally led authorities to Casey and Vicky White, who share the same last name but are not related. Security cameras capture what appears to be Casey at a local car wash, placing the pair in the area, three states away from where this story started. Just this afternoon, the couple was spotted near the local sheriff's office, fleeing and leading police on a pursuit that would end in a car crash. It all started 11 days ago with an audacious escape here in the quiet town of Florence, Alabama. In this surveillance video, Deputy White, a 25-year veteran of the Sheriff's Department and a trusted assistant director at the corrections facility, can be seen escorting inmate Casey White, serving a 75-year prison sentence. The pair exited the Lauderdale County Detention Center unaccompanied.
She was alone, which was a strict violation of policy. Our policy is any inmate under those charges are to have two sworn deputies escort them.
Deputy White, who was also in charge of coordinating inmate transportation, telling her colleagues that she was taking the inmate to the local courthouse for a mental health evaluation. My colleague Elwin Lopez has been on the ground covering the story.
Right behind this is where the now former corrections officer was seen opening the door for Casey White. He was in handcuffs as he got into the back of her patrol car, all under the guise of going to a court appointment that never existed.
According to the sheriff, this video shows Vicky White's patrol car minutes later in an intersection that was off the route to the courthouse.
The sheriff's office says that the patrol car was ditched here in this parking lot at this shopping center. It was spotted as early as around 11 a.m., but it wasn't until hours later that authorities realized the two Whites were missing.
Almost immediately, federal agencies became involved in the search, issuing a $10,000 reward for inmate White.
Casey White should be considered armed and extremely dangerous. So, you know, right now our hope and prayer is that we get him before somebody gets hurt.
By Monday, as Deputy White's involvement in the escape became more incriminating, law enforcement issued a warrant for her arrest, releasing this wanted poster. The timing of Vicky White's disappearance catching many close to her off guard.
Those of us who work with Vicky White and have worked with her for years, this is not the Vicky White we know by any stretch of the imagination.
A little more than a week prior, the deputy had sold her home for just over $95,000 in cash.
I doubt she's ever even had a speeding ticket. But, I mean, she's always been, what I'd say, a good person. And like I say, this is all a shock.
Vicky's mother says she spoke to her daughter the morning she disappeared.
This just not her. This is like a total day and night.
Vicky's former mother-in-law, who she remained close with, also shocked.
Vicky's not that kind of person. She was always nice to everybody. I can't understand it.
Sherry Brown, a fellow corrections officer, says she's stunned by the events, but believes Vicky was a good person under enormous pressure.
for us women. It's really hard for us correction officers to keep these people in control and in line.
I think Vicky White looks like she had done a pretty good job of secreting her relationship with Casey White, probably both whatever interaction they may have had when he was in the state prison. And clearly, once he got to Lauderdale County, Alabama, where she basically was in charge of the jail, she could probably more easily talk to him or walk down to his cell and have communication with him.
Casey White was serving time for a violent 2015 crime spree, including a home invasion, carjacking, and police chase. His arrest seen in this police dash cam video. He was also awaiting trial for capital murder, the stabbing of a 58-year-old woman. As the search for the missing pair intensified, authorities continued to share information. By day four, the U.S. Marshals tweeted this infographic, highlighting the significant height difference between the 6'9" Casey and the 5'5" Vicky White. Law enforcement also releasing bulletins with pictures of the inmates' distinctive tattoos, suggesting an affiliation with the Alabama-based white supremacist prison gang, the Southern Brotherhood. Police publicizing simulations of what Vicky White might look like if she dyed her hair, the sheriff saying she'd use aliases as she planned the escape.
I'm assuming she's probably ditched those aliases and probably got some new identities now.
By Friday, exactly 1 week after their escape, a major development. Authorities announced they'd found the duo's getaway car abandoned in Tennessee.
There had been an attempt to spray paint it. It's a botched up job.
But there was still one big lingering question. Where was the couple?
On that particular issue, we're sort of back square one. Did they steal another car, hitch a ride with somebody or something? You know, we don't know.
This isn't the first time a version of this has happened. I mean, if you look at the New York State Prison of Dannemora, where you didn't have a correctional officer, but you had a woman who worked full-time inside the prison who developed a relationship with two inmates.
Upstate New York in 2015, in Dannemora, convicts David Sweat and Richard Matt are both convicted murderers at maximum security Clinton Correctional Facility. One night, they're suddenly gone without a trace. Hacksaw blades and pyro tubes used in that escape supplied by this woman, prison employee Joyce Tilly Mitchell, after striking up close relationships with both men.
They have this ability to target people who are vulnerable and basically almost like cast a spell over them of, you're the only thing in the world that matters to me. And let's face it, inmates have an endless amount of time to develop these relationships while they're incarcerated.
The manhunt spanning 22 days and hundreds of miles, involving thousands of officers combing dense woods along the Canadian border. David Sweat was captured by law enforcement authorities after being shot and wounded. His accomplice, Richard Matt, was shot and killed. With the hunt for the Alabama fugitives now over, the Casey White in custody, the mystery behind the duo's escape endures.
The lesson that I think I've learned, and I think everybody's learned, you don't know who you can trust. You know, I had every bit of trust in Vicky White. She has been an exemplary employee. And what in the world provoked her or prompted her to pull a stunt like this, I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know. So I've learned that you just don't know people sometimes. You think you do, and you really don't know who they are.
Up next, we go backstage with Jennifer Grey. Why she wants to do the Dirty Dancing sequel.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Jennifer Grey will always be known for the role that made her a household name and a Hollywood star. And she's good with that. So much so that she's about to bring Baby back in the long-awaited sequel to Dirty Dancing. ABC's Amy Robach got to meet her.
I'm known for two things in terms of the world, not my friends or my family. Two things. Nobody puts Baby in a corner, and Jennifer Grey ruined her career, ruined her face, took away everything unique about her by being a slave to plastic surgery. But I never wanted a nose job.
Jennifer Grey bearing it all in her deeply candid new memoir, Out of the Corner. Starting with the role that changed it all, starring as Baby opposite Patrick Swayze in the cult classic Dirty Dancing.
You write about when you heard they wanted Patrick Swayze to play the part of Johnny Castle that you said, quote, anybody else please. Why?
I did a movie with Patrick.
Yes.
Called Red Dawn. I found that his pranks and kind of his way, it just did not jive with my thing, and I didn't trust him. I felt like he wasn't serious.
Well, I'm curious, did that play a role in your fear from doing the iconic?
He was a serious dancer, and male ballet dancers, the whole deal is lifts. It was easy. It was for him, it was like, it was just like, you know, like nothing for him. It was me, it was my fear, my lack of trust that somebody would take care of me.
Nobody puts Baby in a corner.
You said he didn't want to say nobody puts Baby in a corner, the most famous movie line perhaps of all time.
Adamant.
So how was he convinced?
Fortunately, they said, let's just do one with that and one with something else, that old trick. And then they just used the one that they want.
You write about wishing Patrick were alive. And you talk about all the things you would say to him. And one of them was, I wish I could tell him I'm sorry.
I wish I could tell him a lot more than I'm sorry. I mean, I'm sorry is a thing that I would say, like, I'm sorry, I was just young and scared and had some idea of how it was supposed to be and wishing you were on time. And like, who cares? You were the best Johnny I could ever, ever have had.
But after Dirty Dancing's success, the parts didn't come pouring in. The young actress told by some it was her nose that was a problem.
My dad had changed his nose. My mom had changed her nose. My grandmother had changed her nose. My aunts, it was a thing.
And you resisted, as you point out, and then you write about why you finally decided.
Right. It was a Jewish girl who was considered not pretty, who would never have been looked at twice by the Patrick Swayze character. So I get this part, and it's hugely successful. But I made $50,000 when I made the movie, and now I'm famous, and I can't support myself. And I thought, okay, maybe I just have to say uncle. I'll do it.
For your career?
For my career, for my ability to support myself.
So she got the surgery, but then needed a second operation to fix an issue caused by the first one. It left her unrecognizable to many.
To the point you write about flight attendants not believing that you were the actress, Jennifer Grey.
It was just the woman at the checkout counter at the airline, and she attacked me as if I was trying to get away with something.
What did that feel like?
Surreal, dude. Surreal. It was like being invisible. And in terms of my career, it was devastating.
Thank God you're all right. You know, we've been worried sick about you.
Grey's star was on the rise when she landed her breakout role in the 1986 film Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where she met her boyfriend, Matthew Broderick.
And then one of the other, I'm sure, defining moments in your life happened in Ireland, 1987. You were with Matthew in the car, and that car struck another one and it ended two lives. What were the days and weeks like for you after that accident? How did you cope?
I was in shock because I was the only living witness, and Matthew was unconscious and had amnesia, and the other two women died. So I was the only one who everyone was looking to me for what happened, and I didn't have the answer. I was putting a cassette in the cassette player at the time, and I heard the scream and I looked up. It was devastating. And there's something about near-death experience and being that close to death, and that curtain just goes up, and just somehow I slip through.
Gray also writes about her childhood growing up as the daughter of actress Jo Wilder and Oscar and Tony Award winning cabaret star Joel Gray.
Welcome and bienvenue. Welcome.
In 2015, her father publicly revealed that he identified as a gay man.
So when your father told the world yes. that he was gay at the age of 82, how long had you known?
I found out in my late 20s, when it initially came out, I was just so heartbroken that he wasn't able to live his whole truth for all those years, for a lifetime. And that if he hadn't done it that way, then I wouldn't exist. And so my gratitude for him to sacrifice himself so that he could have a family and I got to be his daughter, that to me is an enormous gift that he gave to me.
You write about your remarkable childhood, growing up, you know, in Broadway dressing rooms with your father, watching him on stage, and your mother doing the same.
I grew up knowing I was the luckiest girl in the world. There was no doubt in my mind. My parents loved me, still love me. I have two 90-year-old parents who I talk to every day.
As she looks back on her life and career, Gray is returning to her most iconic role in a new sequel to Dirty Dancing. Gray will executive produce and star.
And I am playing Baby, and I hope they don't call me Bubby at this point. There will be dancing. There will be a lot of music and romance, and God, I hope this book will be a template for, you know, what happens to Baby.
What's the message? What's the reason behind the book?
You don't get out unscathed. For me, the most painful moments, the most confounding situations, are the ones, for me, that I have grown the most from and that were, I guess, necessary to get me to where I am today, which is happier than I've ever been, is the truth.
Our thanks to Amy. And finally tonight, Bono and the Edge, underground in Kyiv. The classic rockers performing Stand By Ukraine, a new version of an old hit, on a subway platform in the Ukrainian capital city. We're joined by a Ukrainian pop band, all of whom were wearing the uniform of their country.
The people of Ukraine are not just fighting for your own freedom, you are fighting for all of us who love freedom.
It was Bono who said, "Music can change the world because it can change people." That's Nightline for this evening. Catch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here, same time tomorrow. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.